Jazz organist Dr. Lonnie Smith, not to be confused with Lonnie Liston Smith, who also is an organist. This is Dr. Lonnie Smith on his Hammond B3 with He's a Mighty Good Leader. Doug Munro on guitar and Lefray Sy on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And President Robert Mugabe of Zimbabwe, yielding to the pressure of impeachment and the demand of the people, has resigned after almost 40 years in power. Well, we're going to be talking today about this newest gift from Donald Trump. As many as 60,000 Haitians given shelter in the United States under an after an earthquake devastated their country in 2010, returned to Haiti by July the 22nd, 2019, the Department of Homeland Security announced yesterday. This is in keeping, the department said, with provisions of the Temporary Protected Status Program, under which the Haitians were allowed to stay in the United States. Joining me now is Kim Ives, an editor of the Haiti Liberté, one of the most well-distributed newspapers and news outlets in the Haitian diaspora. He has been our frequent correspondent on things Haitian, and I'm so delighted that you could be with us today. Kim, great to have you.
Well, I'm glad to be back on your show, Eutrice.
Well, it looks as if, I mean, you are assured lifelong employment as a reporter because so many things are going on and going wrong in Haiti, and this is the latest of them. What is the situation here? What actually happened yesterday?
Well, the Temporary Protected Status, TPS, which President Barack Obama gave to Haitians in 2010, following the January 12, 2010 earthquake, had been renewed for 18 months almost by automatically because the situation in the country has not improved. The despite $13 billion of aid from around the world going to Haiti because it was shepherded by the Clintons, because it was pilfered by various governments along the way, it ended up doing very little for improving the situation of Haitians. There are still some 40,000 still living under tents. There are other natural disasters which hit Haiti, in particular Hurricane Matthew, which struck Haiti a year and a month ago, one of the worst hurricanes to hit the country in 52 years. It caused about $2.8 billion in damages. That's about 22% of Haiti's GDP. And it left hundreds of thousands in homelessness and hunger and economic ruin. So the situation there is very bad. Even Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's State Department has been told on September 12th, be careful about traveling to Haiti's southern peninsula because of the security concerns remaining after Hurricane Matthew's passage a year ago. So it was ironic that Secretary Tillerson would write a note to the Department of Homeland Security acting director, Elaine Duke. She was preceded by John Kelly, who, of course, moved on to become Trump's chief of staff. But he, Tillerson sent Duke a letter saying, well, there are no longer any conditions in Haiti or Central America, for that matter. Nicaraguans, Hondurans, and Salvadorans all have TPS, at least some of them, who came after natural disasters there. So it was more or less foreseen that they were getting ready to cut it, and indeed that's what happened yesterday. They cut it. Now, to sort of sweeten the pill, they, instead of the usual 6 months that TPS beneficiaries are given to make their arrangements and get out of the country or face deportation, they gave them 18 months. So, in fact, this was a very tricky formulation, I think, because a lot of Haitians said, oh, well, we have 18 months again. They saw the 18 months, which was the usual, a year and a half is the usual renewal period for TPS. So a lot of people said, oh, well, we got another 18 months. Well, no, this basically TPS ends on January 22nd, 2018 for Haitians, and then they have 18 months to pack their bags. Now, this is not going to be easy because a lot of them have started families here in the past 7 years. They've had businesses started. They've, you know, become to disentangle themselves from the lives they've established here. But of course, to finish up in this long answer to your first question, the biggest element is that Haiti is reliant on the remittances that these TPS beneficiaries, like all Haitian expatriates here, send back to Haiti. $2 billion a year. This is the largest flow of foreign exchange to the country. Comes from Haitians working here in the United States, in New York and Miami and Boston and Philadelphia, in, you know, hotels and the public transit, in all walks of life, you see Haitians, and that money goes back to really support people in Haiti. Now, that is going to be cut off. And in addition, these about 58,700 Haitians will be sent back to Haiti, the vast majority of them, and this will become one more weight on a country that is still food insecure after the earthquake and the hurricanes, and in a very dramatic economic straits.
Well, I wanted to put this in perspective. The United States has a right, as any other country, to decide, you know, who stays and who goes, who comes in, etc. That is established. But it did agree to receive these Haitians under certain protection. It's actually called the Temporary Protected Status Act, which means you should rest easy. You're coming in after some major catastrophe in your life. We're accommodating that. But this is particularly special because we have a disaster. Everybody agrees it was a major disaster. But here we had a president of the United States, Bill Clinton. We had a secretary of state, Hillary Clinton, during this time. But Bill Clinton managed to get himself appointed to shepherd the reconstruction and revitalization of Haiti after the earthquake under the auspices of an international pot of money, billions of dollars, and he vowed that he would rebuild Haiti bigger and better. Did he do that? No. And beyond that, there has been no accounting for the money. So technically, these people who came in under temporary protected status have been victimized twice. They should be, even if the United States said that, it's enough time now and you got to go back home. There are no homes built. But nobody's calling Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton into account. What say you? Where is the money that should have constructed homes as was promised, as was paid for, so that the people who were transplanted after this devastating 7.0 earthquake in 2010 should be able now to go back home to literally homes?
Well, this is, of course, $64,000, I should say, $13 billion question. Where did the money go? There's a documentary to this effect. They look primarily at the Red Cross Disappearing Act, where they managed to build six houses with, I forget what the amount was, some astronomical figure, $16 million, I think.
Wait. I want to go back to what you just said there, because my mind is kind of spinning right now. Did you say six homes?
Yeah, six homes. You can look it up. It was actually an investigation done by NPR and Publica and ProPublica. They did pull it up. Yes, they built only six homes after the earthquake, and that was with $488 million in donations. Six permanent homes, $488 million. So you can do the math. That's a little less than $1 million per home. And believe me, these are basically plywood shacks. So this was a report. People can look it up. ProPublica and National Public Radio looked into it. But the question is, this is endemic in Haiti. It has, for decades now, received so-called aid from the U.S. and other developed countries, which ends up primarily paying the people who are giving the aid. It's just the left hand giving the right hand. And usually the developments that are done primarily to benefit U.S. business. For instance, with the aid that went in of that $13 billion, one of the principal things they helped establish was a sweatshop in Cape Haitian, which is far from the earthquake area. That's in the north. The earthquake happened in Port-au-Prince, which is in the south.
By the way, we have to always keep track. That project, too, was a Clinton project.
Yes, exactly. Yes, that was you took the words right out of my mouth. Yeah, that was basically shepherded and championed by Hillary Clinton. And so this the sweatshops in Caracol, which basically paved over, as we've talked about on this program, I think several times, paved over some of Haiti's most fertile farmland, pristine mangrove forest, destroyed coral reefs, is polluting the aquifer in the area. It is an ecological disaster, and now the 30,000 jobs that they thought they were going to generate, I think it's a small fraction of that. I don't know what it's standing at now, but it was hadn't yet gone over 10,000. So we had a couple of months ago. So this is the MO, shall we say, of foreign aid in Haiti to essentially use the misery and distress of the Haitian people to justify, pumping in money that will essentially go back to benefit U.S. business. But all of that being said, the big irony is that aware of Haitians' sort of anger at the Clintons for their hypocrisy in being the stewards of this $13 billion, Trump visited Little Haiti last September, basically 14 months ago. And when he got there, and I'll quote, he said, "The truth is that Haiti is still suffering very badly, maybe as badly as immediately after the 2010 earthquake." And he said, "I will be your champion. I will be.
That's
I
right.
want to be your
I
greatest
be
champion,
your
and
champion,
I will be your champion."
He said.
Say it again.
No, I said, I remember he went to reported it. He went to South Florida when it was looking kind of bleak for him in terms of the election, and he needed every single vote he could get, and he made a big thing of coming to Little Haiti in South Florida and talking all that smack. I will be your champion,
So this is the tremendous irony, is here's this, guy who puts himself as the anti-Clinton, the drain the swamp, the stop the corruption, and yet after claiming that he would be their champion, he ends up being the one to give them the knife in the back. So essentially, Haitians are completely angered, and last night sitting at Haiti Liberté, it was just the phone was ringing, and what are we going to do? You know, we have to demonstrate, because I think most people, a lot of people, there were just hundreds of letters and petitions and appeals, and not just from Democratic sectors, from all types of Republicans. Marco Rubio, of all people, was out in front on this. The two Gusano House of Representative peoples, Diaz, Ballart, I forget their names, in Florida. The elected officials at the local, state, national level, religious, unions, community leaders, there's about three or four or five legal expert reports, editorial boards, the Miami Herald, New York Times, Washington Post, you name it, all came out saying Haitians should get another 18-month extension, at least. And on top of it all, the Haitian government was saying, listen, we're going to have a little hard time dealing with these people if you send them back. But Trump and his crew, of course, don't care. And, we should recall John Kelly, the chief of staff. This guy, John Kelly, has a history with Haiti. He was the one who was in charge of Southcom. He was in charge of the U.S. occupations of Haiti back in the 2004 coup against Aristide. So we see essentially the foxes guarding the chicken coop once again, and they are completely insensitive despite this avalanche of support for Haitians to get another extension.
Well, I am kind of a fundamentalist, as you know. I like going to the bottom of things, as you do. But this issue now is being cast into the environment of the United States basically taking charge of its borders, deciding, taking a closer look at people who have come into the United States under all kinds of programs, and including TPS. Are they suitable to be among us, or should they be sent back where they came from? All of this false patriotism and nationalistic talk is what is prevailing. I am still saying the big fat rat here, or rats, are the Clintons, because it would not have been an issue at all had $13 billion, which have not yet been accounted for, had that money gone into doing what they said they would do. Swearing to the international community that is funding this effort in order to kind of really give these folks a leg up after such a devastating experience with this earthquake. We are talking about who deserves to be here and who does not deserve to be here, when the issue is who stole the money and didn't do what they're supposed to do, and who should be not just in jail, but under it.
Well, Utrice, I guess I sort of half agree with you that, yes, the transnational bourgeoisie of the United States, of of which the Clintons and Obama were representatives, were handy men and women, basically doing their bidding. Transnational bourgeoisie have created a world which has not only cast Haitians into this hell hole and made money off them in the process of doing it, but the U.S. working class, working classes around the hemisphere and the planet, we can say. And this is what gave rise to Trump, the reaction to this, when they blocked the Bernie Sanders candidacy, and then the American working class, many Haitians among them, I might say, voted for Trump because they said, we got to have some alternative. We're not going to have another Clinton in there. And now this is what they got. But unfortunately, he's a Nazi of sorts. He's anti-immigrant, make America great again, i.e. white again. This is the result, really, of the malpractice, shall we say, of people like the Clintons. And there are many others. You know, the Clintons are simply the most well-known. But this hypocritical and double-dealing political group, which represented this multilateral transnational capital, they essentially ended up in this situation where we have this Trump regime, which is really just taking a reaper to people like the Haitians.
Well, I think you're mellowing in your old age. I think so.
Yeah.
It's still, to me, the point still is not so much Trump, because he's doing what any politician would do. And I would say that, you know, part of getting elected was lying, which he normally does. He went to little Haiti and talked lovingly toward them and whatnot, turns around and totally reverses his position. That's politics. But I'm talking about a situation now, which is a crisis, both in Haiti and for Haiti and here in the United States, in the Haitian community. This is a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
We have once more Haitians paying the price for massive corruption, theft, violation of the law, and their lives are in jeopardy because other people. And I can't move away from the Clintons. When you get $13 billion, and that's just one aspect of the theft, one aspect of the crimes committed here, we have Hillary Clinton's brother getting the almost exclusive rights to mine Haiti's gold. We have all these other interconnected ripoffs, including stealing land and so forth in Haiti, by these people who have managed to get away from it for years. And I'm still saying, whatever Trump's current position is, because I think it is something that could be resisted, but it still will come back to the fact that the initial cause, the root cause of this problem, renegade high-level Americans, including a former president and a former secretary of state, colluding with corrupt forces and elements in Haiti, and consequently the money that should have provided housing, which is what they will need now, these people who have been protected under the temporary protected status program, now have to go back home and meet and deal with the same conditions that they left. So, and nobody is in a position to demand what happened to evaluate the performance. And I think even Chelsea Clinton herself had admonished her mother, saying, "What the heck is going on here? This isn't right. This isn't working."
And yes, that was in the emails, which we treated on the Haiti Liberté site. Yes, it said.
Yes,
that,
you did. You reported that.
Yeah.
And I mean, we have confessions essentially that they're not doing the job, but beyond that, $10 billion. That's where I'm focused. You just talked about six homes being built with, although there was a budget of in excess of, what, $4 million? I mean, what, how many million?
$488 million. Yes,
$188 million gets you six homes.
Yeah.
400.
Yeah, 488 billion, million, million. So the only thing I would say, Eutrice, is that to me it's a systemic.
I'm willing to be placated. Go ahead.
Yes,
you're
no,
a good friend.
No, I, there's nothing I could say in defense of the Clintons. Yes, by all means, they are getting their just desserts with your evisceration of them online on the air here, but. The larger problem, I don't want to minimize this Trump problem. There are about 10 nations, if we include the Nicaraguans and Haitians who are now being shown the door, who enjoy TPS right now. That accounts for about 300,000 immigrants in the U.S. working and sending money home to their countries, which are, in more cases than not, still TPS worthy. That is in terrible economic condition, either due to a hurricane, an earthquake, or civil strife, usually, again, U.S. Fomented. So in a number of these cases, the Clintons may not have had as direct a role in creating the problems in those countries. Some of them predate them, even. I mean, the Nicaraguans and the Hondurans go back to 1999, 2000, etc. So the point is that, to me, that the international capitalist system has basically pushed the poor nations and the poor classes of our country into a total corner, where they're drowning, they're dying, and they're looking, they're grabbing for any straw that they can. And Trump offers a straw, but the fact is, you know, he's a fascist. He's the guy who is there to basically get them out of the country, send them back into hell. So what is happening for the Haitians, which, of course, the Clintons have a primary role in it, but it's also happening to the Nicaraguans, and it's going to happen to the Hondurans, to the Salvadorians, and to the other nations who are on TPS now, because Trump has this completely anti-immigrant posture, which, you know, right-wing leaders around the world always embrace.
Yes, his father would be proud.
Yes, he
of
would
what
be.
He has become, of what he has spawned.
Of the monster.
Listen,
he's created.
Kim, you are indispensable, and I'm so happy that you are doing the kind of work that you have been doing for so many years, keeping an eye on how people are suffering needlessly by systems intricately organized to yield exactly that result. And I don't disagree, even though I might have sounded like I disagreed, but I don't disagree at all with your premise about Trump not escaping the wrath of the people. I believe strongly in what it is you're saying, and thank goodness that you're one of those out there right on top of the issues happening in Haiti. And we will continue the conversation. I know that you're pressed for time today, but I'm thankful that you were able to give us this much time, even under your pressure. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you, as always, Eutrice. Talk to you
thank
soon.
Thank you. We'll take this little break and come back and talk about some other stuff. Sounds almost like church, doesn't it? Yes, it does. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead on PRN.fm. Well, in our ongoing tsunami of sex crimes and people being outed for them, we have today Charlie Rose, who is a well-known broadcaster on CBS, being fired because some disturbing, according to CBS News, they said disturbing allegations were lodged against him. And so the task of those remaining on his program today, they were basically commiserating, but at the same time reading very nicely interposed statements from CBS about how CBS will not tolerate these things and so forth. It actually is a statement to protect the organization legally. We also have, you know, in this net that has been wide cast, we have Representative John Conyers, a longtime representative from Detroit, entangled in this mess today. Supposedly, he is reported to have settled a sexual harassment complaint in 2015. Okay. I still say that something else is going on here that we need to pay attention to. There is nobody at this point, because of the velocity, the mass of this movement has already, it has already achieved critical mass this early in the game of leveling the boom at people who so far have not been able to defend themselves. And in the case, I'll take the case of John Conyers. Okay, he settled a claim in 2015. What does that mean? But you see, this is what I'm pointing to as the intricacies of things. Nobody cares about the details, and it is in the details that you really find the story. Now, I've myself criticized John Conyers many times. He's an establishment Democrat, but he does have some kind of standing in the community and within Congress itself. Now, if the report is, I'm talking from a strictly news perspective, the report is that he settled a claim. What does that mean? If you settled a claim, it means the other person settled too. You understand? You settle a claim, it means you and the other person agree. It's a kind of no fault. You cancel each other out. You pay some money that is demanded, and the lawyers sit down and work out the details, and lo and behold, there is a settlement, which means there was no intention to go to court, no intention to criminalize this act, whatever it was, that in the eyes of the law constituted or might have constituted sexual harassment. So if you're settling, both sides agree this didn't happen. Whatever it is that might have come to court as an official charge, you're canceling it out. Because whoever was about to complain or whoever could have complained has agreed that the money, the compensation, the financial compensation was enough to squash the truth, whatever the truth would have been had it been known in a court of law. So now we have reported today. Now I'm reacting purely on a journalistic level here. I do not know John Conyers personally, and even if I did, I would still see it this way. I am curious now as to why this is news. And not just news pertaining to both people involved in the settlement. I mean, he didn't settle with himself, did he? There was a person, a woman, who is yet to be named, who came to terms, even though she later might have decided to file an official complaint. There was no official complaint here. This is what I mean, people are playing fast and loose. It's going to come back and bite all of us in the butt. The intent clearly was to malign the congressman and to sweep him up in this whole tidal wave of bad behavior by men allegedly against women and other people, because there have been a couple of men who filed also claiming to be sexually harassed by other men. Okay. But let's get back to this case, because it's very interesting and very symbolic. It means you have no rights now. Even when you settle, you have absolutely no way to defend yourself. You are forever scarred, no matter what the truth of the situation is. Let me repeat. His case, John Conyers' situation, for which he is being excoriated by the media, is that he came to settlement allegedly over sexual harassment with the person who might have been wanting to lodge charges against him. He came to settlement in 2015. Now, why do people come to settlements with things? For all kinds of reasons. Sometimes they want to avoid the hassle of a regular proceeding, which would involve a whole bunch of things you don't want to deal with. Depositions, and private investigators, you have to pay for transcripts. You have to pay for somebody to take the transcripts. It gets to be ridiculous, and it gets to be very costly. In some cases, people settle because it's too much money. It is easier to just settle, get it over with, move on. Sometimes people settle because they're guilty, and they know if they were to go to court, chances are, 9 out of 10, they would be found guilty. If the other party is amenable, they'll just settle. avoid the spectacle of a public trial and call it a day. But in any event, settlements basically establish two things. One, it's a fair deal. Nobody is going to hold anybody accountable for anything. They're going to just call it a day. Number two is that they will not speak about this ever again. This is, nothing in the settlement is for public knowledge. That's generally two of the most important things agreed upon in settlements. And by the way, settlements are not just two people sitting in a room and working it out. Settlements are legally ratified. It goes through a court process. Parties A and B, represented by their respective attorneys, go before the court and offer the court the terms of settlement that the parties have agreed to. And if the court says, okay, this looks okay, they sign off on it, and then it becomes a settlement, period. Now, they're reporting on John Conyers' settlement, which raises a major question. Did the other party break the rule? Did somebody leak this? But even within the newsroom, somebody should be in a position to explain what they, reporters, the limits that they are operating under when they are reporting on settlements. You see, even if they're reporting on a leak, they have an obligation to say that these are the terms of a settlement and the parties do not wish to comment further on it. You don't report it as if a settlement is a conviction. Then you don't understand the law. You don't understand defamation law at all. Or you think you can play fast and loose in some cases, but observe due caution in others. I'm asking, why the departure here from what I would expect to be standard journalistic procedures? On the other side, I mean, Brother Charlie Rose, he skipped town. He was fired. He was fired. But even before he was fired, he was indicted by the media and convicted by the media based on hearsay, not based on any formal charge. As I understand it, there still is no formal charge against Charlie Rose, but CBS is well within its view to fire him because his employment contract doesn't give him the same rights as the law. His employment contract states conditions under which he may retain his employment. One of those conditions is you don't bring any scandal here. You're going to cost us to lose business. You're going to cost us to lose our integrity in the eyes of the public. We don't even care whether you're innocent or guilty. You just got to go. You are going to be negatively affecting our business with these allegations hanging over your head. So until you resolve that, you can't be seen on our set. Now, if you should go to trial and it's proven that you're totally innocent, you could come back. We will talk about you coming back. But until then, bye-bye, Charlie. Now, I'm explaining these things to you to point out that in the frenzy that we have, driven by women, we can't escape that. This is driven by women in power who are not intending to observe proper protocols so as to defend the integrity of what they're doing. They don't care at this point. They just want heads rolling. And they're keeping a chart. How many heads did we get today? Oh, 20? Great. Tomorrow, let's go for 25. In the frenzy of getting these trophies, they are setting aside the rule of law. I'm not one of those people who, you know, gets up in the morning and say, but the rule of law. I'm not one of those. But I'm saying that I am observing this trend. It's very troublesome. They seem not to care because at the moment, every trophy they get, no matter the circumstances they get, is considered winning. And that is what is driving a lot of this right now. Winning. Women winning over men. You know, I like winning. But winning is even more important when you win making the appropriate charges and following some rules. These lawyers, Gloria Allred, I have pointed out, should be brought before a disciplinary committee. She's not acting as a lawyer. She's acting as someone aiding and abetting the possibly illegal and unfortunate besmirching of people's characters. As a lawyer, you're there to advise. You're not there to be part of the fight in the sense that you are telling people, the public, I mean, that your client has pointed out somebody, the person should be found by the entire world before there's even a charge, an official charge, and then an official trial that the person is guilty. That is not right. It is not only wrong, it is illegal under the law. Sure, in the short term, you will get, you know, you'll get person A being deprived of a public office he's running for, or you'll get a public shaming of somebody who you think really deserves it. You'll get all those results. They're not good results. But they're good results given the attitude and temperament of this burgeoning movement, which is, we are coming out against the men, we'll get them no matter what. We're going after big fish. We're not interested in small fish. You would notice that almost every person so far that has been strung up in the net of sexual harassment suspicion is a high-profile person. We know what they're thinking, these women. And therefore, this impedes the just cause that they could have. The just cause here is for true justice. Many women have sustained serious damage, not just physical, but psychological. And in some cases, many cases, economic. This is a very serious situation. It is not about going head hunting every day and trapping somebody. And no matter how they get a victory, They just want to get it. How many women of color? You notice you don't see too many. This is a white women's fight. White women are fighting white men. They don't have to say that. But they're showing us every single day. And they need to step back. They need to slow down. They need serious counsel among themselves, because there are many high-powered women and men who would be willing to discuss how best to go about this. But this is not the way. This is not the way. I think I'm one of the only voices talking this way. This is not the way to do it. You're doing a grave injustice. Even to your own clients, you're doing a great injustice to this movement, this burgeoning movement. You're doing a grave injustice to your clients as well. And you're doing a grave injustice to what this could be. True justice, the formulation of a method, setting up some rules about what you can and cannot do. The media outlets that you're depending on for coverage, which is why you're sensationalizing everything now, so as to put in the minds of the public, everybody you point a finger at is automatically guilty. Media organizations need to revisit the rules of slander and libel and defamation. They act like they've never heard these things before. Hire a consultant who will inform them of what limits you are reporting within. And certainly there ought to be serious consequences. I know I sound like Madam Conservative here, but there should be serious consequences for people who play fast and loose with the facts. When you casually, quote, report something and cause incredible harm to people who very likely may have a good case to make to defend themselves, but you're not interested in their defense. Nobody reporting today that John Conyers settled a sexual harassment complaint in 2015 is interested in reporting, if they in fact are so bold to report it. They're not interested in finding out what the circumstances were, and it is clear that they have taken sides. If you're reporting a settlement, we should see the other person, shouldn't we? Because that's the whole point of a settlement. Nobody's guilty. Both parties hold each other harmless. But we see only John Conyers. Only his picture. Then you don't understand what a settlement is, or you insist on not understanding what a settlement is. And now you are open to be questioned about your interpretation of the word fair. Are you being fair when you zoom in on John Conyers? But you don't even mention the woman's name. You don't mention what the terms of settlement are. You only need to understand what the word settlement means. Now, I used to teach my students that. You cannot play fast and loose with matters of libel and slander and defamation. It may be a quick ploy to gain some points in the public, to get more advertising, to get more viewers, more listeners. But you're playing with people's lives here. And you better be careful. Well, that brings me to the end of the program today. I thank you so much for listening and making this your go-to program and your go-to station for things that matter, to you. Please pass the word about PRN.FM and join us as often as you can. Coming up next, I don't know what's coming up next. I lost my page. But in any event, stay tuned, and you can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Thank you, and I'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.